So welcome to the Harvard Macy Institute podcast. I'm Victoria Brazel, and today, a little bit of a different episode. This is, in fact, a recording of a live podcast that I did with some of the faculty during the Harvard Macy course, Transforming Your Teaching Using Technology. This is a great annual live virtual course, which is run over a number of weeks, looking at different aspects of technology and how it enables our work as health professions, educators, and scholars. And the week that I was involved with involved social media, networking, and thinking about issues like digital presence, online professionalism, and a whole host of topics related to social media in particular. Now, the reason we recorded this podcast live during the session was so that we could focus on the content within discussions with the faculty, but also so that we could reflect on the medium of podcasting and think about its utility as a way of communicating with our audience, whether they are our students or learners, or indeed with our health professions, educational peers and scholars. So what you'll hear shortly is us going live when I'm doing this podcast with Teresa Chan, Patricia Tran, and Justin Kreuter as we talk about social media and networking. So I hope you enjoy it. Here's the podcast. So welcome to the Harvard Macy Institute podcast. I'm Victoria Brazel, and I'm joined today by three wonderful guests to be talking about the topic of social media and networking for health professions educators. Is it a good idea? How should we do it? What are the risks? These topics and more we'll be talking about today. So to introduce my guests, I'm going to start with Justin Kreuter, who's a pathologist at the Mayo Clinic, and importantly to today goes by the Twitter handle of @KreuterMD. How are you, Justin?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for letting me join you today.
Excellent, excellent. And I'm joined by someone who I've only recently met, but who seems to be making quite the splash in social media, and that is Patricia Tran, who's a pediatric hospitalist at the Children's Hospital in Illinois. And she tells me she's on all the socials at Patricia Tran MD. How are you, Patricia?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful. And an old friend, Teresa Chan, in part because she shares my clinical specialty of emergency medicine, but also quite the scholar on social media and about social media. She's from McMaster University in Canada. How are you, Teresa?
I'm just great. Thank you very much for asking.
And everyone also knows you on all the socials at T Chan MD. All right. So for our listeners, we're actually recording this podcast in the midst of a Harvard Macy session of all about technology and social media and networking. And I want to give a little recap of where we've been so far. We started off by trying to get a sense of where our scholars are at in the social media swimming pool. And in fact, there was quite a spread. There were some who were dipping their toe at the beginning, some who were swimming well and truly and doing all the strokes. And in fact, there were one at least who was getting out of the pool and running back down the other end. Now, Patricia, did that spread surprise you as a sort of looking at a typical group of health professions educators?
You know, it really did not surprise me to see that there has been such varied experience or inexperience with using social media as an educational tool. Social media has traditionally been thought of as a way for people to connect on a personal level, but people don't really approach it as a professional or educational tool until they've been using it for several years or sometimes never.
Mm, yeah, fantastic. And I think that would have been interesting, actually, if we'd sort of said in this pool, are you in the deep end on Instagram because you do a lot of shopping there, but you're in the shallow end in terms of actually promoting your scholarship or your medical school. And so, in fact, there's a little bit of a couple of dimensions to where we are in this swimming pool. Hmm, how interesting. Well, Patricia, then you went on to provide a session on the sort of the why and the what, and gave us a sense of the breadth of platforms that there are on social media. And I think made that point that there's also different platforms for different purposes, including introducing me to a new one called Spoutable. Teresa, can I ask you, and you were joining in the chat here and illustrating stuff about you knew which platforms were being sold to other people. You have got this immense broad scanning across these, but how do us mere mortals keep track of this and decide what to use for what?
Yeah, so I think a big part of figuring out how you're going to dip your toes in if you're just getting started is actually working on making a decision as to what you want to share and who you want to share it with. Each of these social media platforms has a vastly different, let's say, audience, but really participation, because they're also donating content. So it's a little bit of both. But your audience, when you're on there and they're following you, for instance, will be vastly different. So if you're someone who just became an assistant dean or associate dean, for instance, apparently all the deans hang out on LinkedIn. I think it's because mm-hmm. all their buddies, the hospital CEOs, are there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a spillover. I think people who have a strong interest in public health tend to be on the most popular platforms. And so you'll see them more on things like Twitter and TikTok and I would say Instagram sometimes. The pediatricians tend to be on Snapchat and Instagram, and sometimes because they're trying to reach patient populations and teenagers and engage with them there. And so each of these platforms and the new ones as they come out, right, Post.io or Spreadable or all of these different ones, I think it's about watching and waiting a little bit before you jump in. It's kind of like not being the first kid in the kiddie pool. You might want to see how other people react as they jump in and then see if it's going to be where you want to be. I think go ahead.
So you keep this message of keep your broad scanning up, but there's no need to necessarily dive in deep into a particular platform. All right. So what we did then is very interesting. Justin, you wrote a series of case studies that our groups were looking at, and I think they beautifully illustrated the breadth of the case studies, illustrated the breadth of our potential identities within the social media world in health professions education. And I'll just sort of pick out the topics. A couple of the cases were thinking about ourselves as teachers and using social media. Some were thinking about our role perhaps in leadership in organizations. Some might be as people responsible for issues like professionalism, and some might be people responsible for faculty development, as we are here. How would we approach those sorts of things? I guess this, again, underlines what Therese was saying about having this savvy. But how did you come up with that sort of framework and the cases? Because they were very insightful, I thought.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, it's looking at where do we see social media start to get employed within the academic medical center. And so that's where I'm seeing, in the medical school environment, both preclinical, clinical, also a lot of institutions are talking about wanting to raise their brand awareness. And so that's really from the experience that we've had highlighting these as cases for this group to tackle, because this is really focused on as educational leaders, where are the situations we might tap into. And it might be independent of whether we have a professional individual presence on social media. We still might get tapped and asked to, well, you know, can you oversee our marketing group, for example, that we've hired to do this? And I think one of the things we saw from the groups in their answers is that was really heartening was just highlighting, starting with the fundamentals of good educational theory. How do we approach this in a systematic way? How do we judge success? Made for a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what we got our groups then to do was to put a couple of questions in a list here. And so I'm going to draw a couple out because I was also so heartened that people also had a bit of skeptical pushback, as we should with any of these modalities. But it was a pretty common question about just the sheer challenge of building brands across these platforms and for the right audiences. And Patricia, I might ask you this because you started off this session with some stories about that. And I think what you really emphasized was this can't just be places where you broadcast stuff. You actually have to be interacting as a way of building those brands. Could you just elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So brand building in general is really based on having a cohesive message that you are trying to get out to a specific audience. So the first thing you need to do is figure out exactly what your message is. Once you figure out what you're trying to get out there, think about next, what is the best method? What modalities should I be utilizing? Is this something that would work really well in a video or audio format? Is this something that would work really well in a visual or infographic type of format, the content that you create is really going to drive what platforms you're going to use to spread that message. Once you have your content and you've decided where you want to get it out to, the next best way to really drive that engagement is to utilize other users who are within your field that are already on those platforms. Link up with them, tag them in your post, ask them for feedback offline and online. Oftentimes that discussion, that Discord online in that space is a way to invite other people to come into the conversation and really just strengthens your own message in the end. You figure out exactly what your audience wants, how to craft your message to direct it specifically to what your audience needs.
Yeah, so having questions and having those things. But I think your real point there is, what are you trying to do? And that just having numbers is for people like us is not necessarily the goal. What actually brand are we trying to achieve? And then choose the formats and then choose the platforms that jump right in there, which is, I think, easy when you have a good sense of the platforms. But I think that's just yet more advertisement for having a sense of it, so that then you can choose where you're going to go deep on. So I guess some of the skepticism, which I think is very good, Justin, was also about thinking, well, there probably are some boundaries around this. And some of your case studies were around, how do we regulate things? What are the dangers? How do we protect people, reputations, other things? I know it's a big topic, but would you have one or two tips for us here?
Yeah, I think my favorite tip for this to give is the way we remain safe on social media is to pretend that we are in an elevator with the CMO of our organization, and imagine that what you're going to share on social media, you are sharing it with that person in the elevator, and there's another patient there present. If you feel proud find sharing that, I think you're probably in good shape. If you sort of say, "Ooh, I really wouldn't want that person to know that," then it would be a hard pass.
Excellent. I think what I'm hearing you also say is, don't settle into Twitter at 10 o'clock at night after a shift, two glasses of wine in. So, definitely some good thoughts. So we're going to wrap up shortly, but maybe for the last comment, Teresa, if I can ask you, one of the things that we've observed in our specialty of emergency medicine, who were very early adopters of social media, everyone had a podcast and a blog, but in fact recently documented in an article, is some of the decline of this, and the engagement on social media is less. So there's a certain amount of churn, isn't there? But I'm just wondering, what does this sort of downslope look like for some platforms or some communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everything comes in waves, and I think that sometimes you'll have a lot of early adopters and then people who are really interested in developing out a certain kind of way to educate. And you'll see this with Flip Classroom, you'll see this with PBL, right? Like, there's a lot of trends that people jump onto, and then everyone does PBL for a while. And so it's not like tech is any different. So the open access and medical education movement that social media was the connector for us, and probably a supercharger for a lot of that. And in that catalyst of actually having all of this enthusiasm, I think that at some point that enthusiasm, because it's off the side of people's desks, because it's a passion project, people get gigs like program director, you get gigs like assistant dean, and then they have to do less and less and less of that passion project. I think that the difference, for instance, between myself and some other colleagues of mine would be that I find a way as best I can to harmonize some of the attributes of what I'm doing so that I am making it count twice. So if I like podcasting, which I do, then I started an institutionally led podcast that I've handed over, actually. And I think that we've mentioned it in the chat, but I'll say it out loud for the podcast listeners. It's called Mac PFD Spark, and it's about helping people spark their interest in things that are beyond their clinical work and in their academic zone. And so the idea there is that you start something that is within your portfolio of faculty development, then it can be institutionalized and it can be supported that way. And then after that, you can use the content from that to be able to repurpose for workshops or for seminars, or to really leave a legacy behind for some of your faculty to archive some of their wisdom. Like, there's a really great podcast where I interview two recent retirees. So I can archive how they actually retired, because they're a power couple that were making big change and doing great things at the university. And now they're retiring. What does that look like? How did they do that? Because many people won't have a mentor that has retired. And that's going to be a really, really good podcast for someone to listen to as they're planning their retirement. So that's the opportunity that we have when we institutionalize some of these. And I think the rise and fall of that partly is because of burnout, partly it was because of COVID. Partly, honestly, I think it's that many of the blogs and podcasts are actually joining forces. So the amalgamation of five or six of these entities together to be more sustainable as a community, we're starting to see that. And so I think that's part of the normalization, let's say, of this accelerant and then normalization of structures that need to support this.
Yeah, which arguably happens probably in any industry. And I'm sure there'll be some interesting business school scholars who might be looking further at that. But I think what you're saying is connecting things to old and new ways is probably one of the keys to success. All right. Well, thank you so much to our guests. We're going to pull up our podcast there. Very illuminating thoughts on both the opportunities, risks, and some of the nuances in relating to using social media for networking and in our teaching in health professions education. So Teresa, Justin, and Patricia, thanks very much. And this is Victoria Brazel signing off for the Harvard Macy Institute podcast.
So the podcast was obviously great fun, and I think quite interesting in terms of talking about that topic. After that live segment within the session, we spent about 15 minutes with the scholars then reflecting on podcasting as an educational medium, and talked a little bit about some of the attractive things with podcasts, that they're able to be listened to at any time, asynchronously. They're quite an intimate medium, feeling as though with the host and in a conversation with guests, people feel quite engaged in those. And the fact now that it's quite an efficient way of learning for many of our students, they can be on the bus or driving to work and feeling like they're getting education at the same time. Also, from a producer point of view, podcasts have never had lower barriers to entry. There's fabulous, relatively cheap technology, both for recording, editing, and indeed disseminating podcasts. The platforms are extremely easy to use. So for health professions educators, it's often an opportunity to leverage some of the work that we're doing. It's not all rosy, though. We also talked a little bit about how it was quite hard to keep a podcast sustainable and needing a team of people or a system in which to do that, and really needing a mission, something more than merely liking the sound of your own voice. So it was a great session. And if you want to find out more about the Transforming Your Teaching Using Technology program, that's on every year at about this time. And you can go to the Harvard Macy Institute website where you'll find some details around the course. So this is Victoria Brazel signing off for the Harvard Macy Institute podcast.